So as I said, my name's Sarah Morgan, and I'm a research fellow in the computer science department, working as part of the Accelerate Science program. My title today is Assessing Psychosis Risk Using Quantitative Markers of Transcribed Speech. So it's been known for a long time that sort of altered language, sometimes referred to by clinicians as disorganized speech, is a core symptom of schizophrenia. So as early as 1911, Bleuler wrote that the primary symptoms of schizophrenia find their expression in language. Today, that's probably a little bit further than most clinicians would go. But nonetheless, disorganized speech is one of the three core symptoms of schizophrenia in the DSM-5, which is the core, so the standard diagnostic manual, alongside hallucinations and delusions. So you need to have one of those three symptoms, either disorganized speech, hallucinations, or delusions, in order to be given a diagnosis of schizophrenia. So what do we actually mean by disorganized speech? So I have taken a sort of list from the Fulton Language Index, which was published by Little et al. In 2002, and which is really a kind of assessment criteria for disorganized speech. So these are the different aspects of disorganized speech which are listed there. And you can see that they include things like poverty of speech or weakening of goal. So that's sort of decreasing the amount of speech. Also sort of lack of information content in the speech itself. Through to other aspects, for example, looseness. So this sort of idea that the connection between ideas is somehow tenuous. On peculiar use of words, peculiar sentences, etc. Traditionally, people have assessed disorganized speech by using kind of lists like this and going through and sort of manually scoring somebody's speech according to whether or not they rate highly on these different aspects. Obviously, that's quite a subjective process. It also requires a lot of training. So most clinicians are not trained to do that. It's very much a specialist area. So increasingly, over the last few years, we've seen a sort of trend towards trying to come up with more computational markers of disorganized speech. What's sort of been, I think, particularly exciting about that over the last few years is that the work in the literature suggested that not only can these sorts of markers be used to quantify disorganized speech, but also that when you quantify disorganized speech in a computational way, the measures that you get might even be able to predict later disease sort of trajectory. For example, Cheryl Corcoran in 2018 proposed a machine learning classifier which could predict psychosis onset with about 80% accuracy based on things like decreased semantic coherence, greater variance in that coherence, and reduced use of possessive pronouns. Similarly, Natalia Motta in 2017 also got a kind of similar sort of accuracy for predicting schizophrenia diagnosis 6 months in advance. This time based on connectivity of syntactic speech graphs. So essentially what she was doing there is taking transcripts of patient speech and then representing them as a graph, essentially where each of the words becomes a node, and then the nodes are linked, so draw edges between the nodes, simply in the order in which those words were spoken. So again, the sort of different approach can also seems to have some power to predict later psychosis. However, it's, as I said, so different researchers have been using different tools to kind of quantify, to try to predict outcome for psychosis. It's not clear which NLP measures are the most informative, or indeed how different measures relate to each other. So it's not really clear in the literature whether or not people using different NLP measures are sort of capturing the same signals or potentially different signals, perhaps corresponding to these different aspects of disorganized speech. And finally, and perhaps particularly topically at the moment, It's not really clear how best to collect speech data from patients. This is particularly timely because there are a number of sort of large studies being set up in the next year or two, obviously pandemic permitting, to try and collect sort of larger amounts of speech data from patients. Because at the moment, the sample sizes that we have in this field are generally very small. So it's obviously for these kinds of studies going forward, it would be useful to know how best to collect the speech data to get the strongest signals. So today I really want to talk about a couple of different projects that we've been doing to try to answer some of these questions. So firstly, some work that we did to look at how informative different NLP measures that have already been described in the literature are, and in particular to try and start to unpick kind of how related they are to each other. And then finally, I'm also going to just talk briefly about a sort of new graph tool that we've been working on to really try to map the semantic content of the speech. So starting with this first question, the data that we've been using comes from King's College London, and so we have 54 participants in total, and those participants are really in three groups. So we have a group of first episode psychosis patients, so these are people who are experiencing psychotic symptoms at a relatively early stage, so they're not sort of chronic schizophrenia patients, but people who are experiencing some symptoms. We also have some healthy control subjects. And then this sort of third quite interesting group of people who have been identified as being at clinical high risk of developing psychosis. So they're sort of, in some sense, in between those two other groups. The groups were all matched for age and sex. And the participants were then asked to describe eight pictures from the thematic apperception test, each for 1 minute. So you can see a couple of examples of these pictures here. You can see they're all sort of black and white, they're relatively old fashioned, but these are the pictures which have been used quite a lot in the past to try to, in some sense, elicit sort of disorganized speech from patients. So mainly I'm going to focus on this picture description task, but the participants also completed two other tasks, in particular story recall task, also gave some free speech samples. Later I'll sort of come back to those and just show you kind of how things change or don't change if we use those sort of alternative approaches to collecting the speech data. Okay. So what we started by doing is really trying to build a sort of speech profile for each individual or each group. So I will just talk to you very briefly through the sorts of measures that we've been looking at. We started with really basic things, so just number of words, mean sentence length, etc. We also then looked at some semantic measures. So measures like semantic coherence, so we're looking at the semantic similarity between adjacent sentences using word and sentence embedding. We also looked at two measures somewhat related of tangentiality and on-topic score. Those measures differ from semantic coherence in that they compare the participant's transcript to a sort of a priori description of the picture or story that we're looking at. So in the case of the story recall task, that's very straightforward because we just use the original story. So we're just comparing the participant's response to the original story. In the case of the pictures, we had some sort of a priori descriptions of those pictures, so just sort of one sentence descriptions of the pictures. With on-topic score, we're comparing the participant's response to that a priori description, sort of on average across all of time. With tangentiality, it's a little bit different in that we're really looking at whether or not the participant's response to the stimuli changes over time. So essentially just taking a slope to understand whether or not, for example, someone starts by describing the picture in a way that's very close to that a priori description, but then over time gradually sort of moves away from that description. We also looked at a measure which we call maximality, which is basically looking for a sort of attempt to come up with a proxy for how repetitive the speech might be. We looked at an ambiguous pronoun count, so just counting the number of times people use pronouns in an ambiguous way. And then finally, we also looked at some of these syntactic speech graph measures proposed by Natalia Motta, which I've mentioned already. But essentially, this is, as I say, sort of mapping the speech with the words being the nodes and the edges just linking them in the order in which they were spoken. And then these sort of LCC and LSC type measures are different ways of sort of quantifying how connected those graphs are. So they're the sort of connected components, essentially. So we deliberately here tried to take a range of different measures to try to capture different aspects of disorganized speech. So what you're seeing on the spider plot then is the group average for those different metrics for the three different groups. So you can already start to see that potentially we might have some differences between the groups. So for example, with the healthy control subjects, generally saying more words than the FEP patients, with somewhat higher semantic coherence, higher on-topic score, and higher speech graph connectivity measures. And then with the CHRP group, that's the clinical high risk group, generally falling somewhere in between the other two groups. So that's at the sort of group level. We can also kind of map individual speech profiles. So this, for example, is one of the descriptions of the picture from one of the clinical high risk participants. And this is one of the pictures that were shown. And so you can see the kind of corresponding speech profile for that participant here in blue. And so you can see that compared to the sort of average of the control subjects, this person tended to sort of say fewer words, but with kind of more shorter sentences. Again, sort of slightly lower semantic coherence, slightly lower speech graph connectivity. So this is just to sort of give you a feel for what the data looks like in quite a qualitative way. Of course, we can also do some statistics. So this is just looking at t-statistics between the groups, the three different possible pairings of the groups for each of those different measures. So the t-statistics are shown in the table with the p-values in brackets. What we found is, as you can see, a number of these measures did show statistically significant group differences. For example, we're seeing reduced somatic coherence in the first episode psychosis patient group compared to the healthy control subjects, reduced on-topic score, and reduced speech graph connectivity measures, as well as a couple of others. The box plots on the right kind of give you a feel for what these group differences actually look like. And so you can see that for things like somatic coherence, these are really very discriminative measures. So for semantic coherence, if we look between the controls and the FEP group, we can really almost draw a line between them. So these are quite large differences. We, as I say, also found a difference on topic score. Interestingly, we didn't find a group difference for tangentiality, which is something that's been reported or looked at quite a lot in the prior literature and where group differences have been found. But at least in this data, it seems to be more that the first episode psychosis patients are sort of moving away from the a priori description over time, and more just that on average, across all of time, their responses were less close to the a priori descriptions. So those are the group differences which we identified. We then went on to look at sort of what the relationships are between these different measures. So this is just a couple of different ways of visualizing that. So what you can see here is that the speech graph connectivity measures are all quite strongly associated with each other. That's really expected. It was all calculated in quite a similar way. But what we thought was really particularly interesting here is that there's actually somewhat of a lack of correlations between some of the other measures. So in particular, if we look between the speech graph connectivity measures and semantic coherence, for example, we're really not seeing much of a relationship there. And that's interesting because it potentially suggests that these different measures are picking up on different and maybe complementary signals in the data. So speech graph connectivity and semantic coherence both show these large group differences, but actually they're not that well correlated with each other. I said I would show you briefly how things change if we look at different types of or different ways of collecting speech data. So on the left-hand column here, you've got the results from the picture description task, which I showed you before. But then in the other two columns, what I'm showing you is the results in the middle column from the story recall task, and then also from looking at free speech. So what we saw here is that actually with using the story recall task, we find quite remarkably really similar results to what we had with the picture description task. Although with the free speech excerpts, we generally find fewer significant group differences. I should sort of add the caveat that there were some sort of inaudible words in the audio recordings, particularly for the free speech excerpts, and we can't rule out the possibility that that played a role here. But nonetheless, it looks like the picture description tasks and the story recall tasks potentially might have some more signal. Okay, so to summarise, we found that several NLP metrics showed group differences. Most were only weakly related to each other. And the speech from the picture description task and story recall task generally gave similar results. And this work is on MedArchive as a preprint. And so if you're interested in the details, please do feel free to have a look at that. I wanted to end by just sort of very briefly telling you a little bit more about some of the new work that we're doing at the moment, which is, as I say, trying to build a sort of new graph tool to try to map the semantic content of speech from the psychosis patients in more detail. So as I've mentioned already, graph theory approaches have already been used to study disorganized speech. So for example, in particular, the work that Natalia Motta has been doing, where the words become the nodes and you map the edges between them. And that's quite, in the literature at least, these are described as quite syntactic graphs. But we know that semantic content is also altered in schizophrenia. And so what we asked ourselves is whether we could construct sort of semantic speech graphs, really to try to map the semantic content of the speech in more detail and to be able to understand a bit better sort of what is really changing about the sort of semantic content of that speech. So this is sort of schematic of the kind of thing that we wanted to do. So to be able to take a transcript like this, to pick out some of the entities in that transcript and the relationships between them and represent that as a graph. And I should mention this is work that's been done really largely by Dr. Caroline Nitterkoven, who's leading this project, who's a postdoc working with me on this. So in terms of constructing the graphs, I'm not going to go into this in much detail, but essentially there's a number of different steps involved, and really two main ones, which are essentially to extract the nodes, the different entities from the speech, and we're using coreference resolution there to sort of merge nodes where where you have sort of the boy and then who's later referred to as he, and so to make sure that that's mapped onto the same node. And then we're also doing some relation extraction to extract the relationships between the different nodes. Essentially, the tool is pulling together those two things. So then this is an example of the sort of semantic speech graph that we've been able to pull out with this tool. So this is one of the pictures and one of the, I think, one of the healthy control subjects description of this picture. And you can see that we're then pulling out some of the entities with this tool. So, for example, the man, the jacket, and the relationships between them. So the man has on the jacket, the man's wearing a hat, etc. So this is the sort of graph that we're getting. We have then used this tool to map graphs from the KCL data, which I introduced you to earlier. And so the different groups here are then shown in different colours. So in blue are the first episode psychosis patient graphs. The yellow are the clinical high risk group, and the green are the healthy control group. And then we have started very in a very preliminary way at the moment to think about what sort of measures we might then be able to pull out from these sorts of graphs and how best to then sort of quantify what these graphs look like. And at the moment, and again, this is a very preliminary result, which we only had in the last week or so, but at the moment it looks like the semantic speech graphs from the first episode psychosis patients tend to be somewhat more fragmented than those we see for the healthy control group. In other words, we have sort of more smaller connected components. So to summarise, we have developed this new semantic speech graph tool to try to map the semantic content of the transcribed speech. We're now starting to look at different features that we can extract from those graphs and package this tool to make it openly available to the community. Ultimately, the sort of longer term goal is to try and combine these different NLP measures, as so there's in the literature, also some of these from our semantic speech graphs, to try to predict longitudinal outcomes for individual patients. And we're starting to work with some of the clinicians in the psychiatry department and the Cambridge Early Interventions Service to start to get some of that sort of longitudinal data so that we can really start to go down to the individual level. So I will end with some acknowledgements. Thank you very much for listening, and I'm very happy to take any questions.